This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Love Letters Live, as many of you know, is about people's stories and the love letters that lurk in our hearts that are so much better written, stamped, and mailed to make someone else's life richer. And in line with love letters, I do want to say that they don't have to be just for romance. They don't even have to be to people. So I'm going to go back to Meredith May. I invited Meredith to come do another Love Letters Live because at the end of her last presentation, I had a couple of questions and she responded with such just electric interest and spontaneous feeling that I wanted to do another one and go into some of these other questions. So Meredith, why don't you just in a couple of words, in case people haven't heard your last presentation yet, tell what you do downtown San Francisco on the roof.
Oh, I'm an urban beekeeper, and I have a couple of beehives on the roof of the San Francisco Chronicle. We put them up there in April. I actually am a writer there. I've worked there since 99.
And you came to this because you learned beekeeping from your grandfather. I'm just going to kind of recap. You learned this from your grandfather, with whom you lived. You lived with your grandparents. And this love for bees has been a big part of your life.
Yeah, I grew up in my grandparents' home, and that was in Carmel Valley. And I was his apprentice as a little kid, and he had beehives along the Big Sur coast, too.
And he was a major producer then.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't just some little hobby of his.
No, like 1,600 pounds of honey a year. I mean, that's still considered a hobbyist to the big commercial guys. But it was all word of mouth.
Yes. So he did a significant job in this world of beekeeping. And then we get into the issue here of hive collapse and what that means and Meredith's love for the bees. And I'd like you all, if you would, to go back and listen to Meredith's first presentation because you will learn a lot about bees that you might not have known. I personally was terrified of them. After talking to Meredith, I'm not scared of them anymore. But I wanted to ask you a couple of things in terms of love letters. So you're a writer and absolutely no stranger to keeping records. And I think of our writers as somehow keeping the minutes of this finite meeting we call life on earth. And in terms of a love letter, I think it's important to remember the historical context of it. Right?
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
Not just doing a love letter to your grandfather here.
No, I'm thanking him for instilling a skill in me that is very sacred and important, you know.
And you're documenting something that's going on right now in terms of our life on Earth, which is hive collapse and a real danger that it poses.
Right? Yeah, I mean, these bees are the major pollinators of most all the fruits and vegetables we eat.
Right. So if we come through this crisis, we will have your book and your love letter to look back on as some real information. I personally appreciate that hugely. I think that's big in this world.
Well, so, it makes me feel better to know that we have a sanctuary and we're trying in our small way to boost the population back.
So, in terms of just your writing, even.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Gonna be, you know, when somebody finds that in 100 years, that's going to be gold.
I hope
right?
so.
Okay, so I want to ask you something else about the brilliance of engineering. Okay. Is really something to note. How does a bee make a hive?
Oh my gosh.
Can you do that for a minute? I mean, that's...
Yeah, and I'll try to put it in plain language because it can get really sciencey.
I'm sure when you look at those things and those little tiny...
Entomological.
Yes, what are they're octagonal little...
Hexagons.
Yes, okay.
So basically you start with a package of bees. You can get them through the mail, actually. You get 5,000, and they come in a wooden box that has mesh on the side so they can breathe. And the queen has her own little chamber, individual wooden chamber that she's in. And you pour the bees into your hive. So you have your hive boxes and they each have frames and the frame.
And they go there willingly. I mean, they know where that's where they belong.
They stay once you shake them out of your mail package. They stay because each frame has a foundation, wax foundation. Uh-huh. And on that's where they'll start building the honeycomb. But they have a sheet of wax that's, you know, very thin. Mm-hmm. So you shake them out. You put the queen, you hang her in her cage in between a couple of frames, and you take the cork out of her little chamber, but you shove a marshmallow in there because the bees need about 2 days to acclimate to her smell and her pheromone. And so they chew through the marshmallow. And by that time, then they'll more likely to accept her.
Hmm.
So she dangles in her cage and then she comes out. And the bees immediately go to work. They bring in nectar and pollen.
Mm-hmm.
And they secrete wax from glands somewhere in their body. I think it's near their head. I'm not entirely sure. But mm-hmm. that's what they build the comb out of. So they make all these sheets and sheets and sheets of comb. And then they store pollen in the comb. That's their protein. Mm-hmm. I think of it as like their hamburger.
Uh-huh.
And they store honey. They put the nectar in the comb. And then they thicken it into honey by fanning their wings. And then the queen also lays her eggs in the individual comb. So the comb has three purposes. It's for rearing the brood, storing the honey, and storing the pollen.
So they know just what they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't know how they know what they're doing, because they also manage to fly back to their hive every day at the end of the workday.
Right. We have two hives on the roof, and the bees that are in hive A don't go in the hive B. They go off in a 5-mile radius. They come back into their hive.
Do we know how they know that?
No.
So.
Well, we know that they can see,
mm-hmm.
And they can, well, I mean, of course they can see. They can recognize objects, and so some beekeepers who have a dozen hives in a row, they'll mm-hmm. paint symbols on each one to help them locate and not get confused. They can get confused, uh-huh. but I've heard that they can recognize their own beekeeper after a while.
That is astounding, because sometimes I think you hear about people, I'll sometimes refer to intelligence. I mean, I consider that just enormous intelligence to know how to make hexagons, to know how to do any of this, and people draw the distinction. They say, well, that's just instinct. I don't know where the line is myself.
That's the secret voodoo magic of bees, is that mm-hmm. they build this architecturally perfect mm-hmm. shape in nature. I mean, if you pull out... If bees go into a tree, a knot of a tree, and build in there, mm-hmm. they don't have frames, and so they're not going to build
in
a square.
Oh, yeah, of course, in nature they don't, right.
But they'll build a perfect parabola of hexagons that uh-huh. are lined up.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because, yes, obviously we don't, in the beginning we couldn't count on the mailman to bring you the
right.
box of bees.
Right.
Yes, that is so interesting. After we talked last time, as soon as we ended our taping here, focusing on your grandfather Franklin piece, I mentioned my own fear, and I felt better about bees for sure. And then I said, but you know, they still come to the table when you're outside barbecuing.
And
they're still buzzing around and they're trying to get your barbecued chicken, and you can gently swish them away and they come back with a vengeance. And you said,
that's not a honeybee, that's a wasp.
And we have a right to
right.
feel
Wait,
that, those, that those creatures are really foes somehow.
Yeah, yeah. There's, you want to know the main difference between the two, because
yes.
there's a lot of confusion.
Right.
And I think a lot of the fear is a fear of a wasp and not understanding what a honeybee is.
Please.
The wasp is the one that won't get away from your sandwich at the picnic. They're carnivores.
So bees wouldn't even come to your sandwich at the picnic.
Bees are vegetarians.
Uh-huh.
They don't want your salami sandwich. And they're much too busy collecting nectar and pollen on flowers.
So given that... Yes, so they wouldn't be coming to the table for food because they're busy and they're already having food.
Mm-hmm.
The wasps come because they need to eat also, right?
Yeah, that's how wasps eat. They mm-hmm. steal. And a wasp is larger. It's got like a waxy, shiny body. It's thinner. It's longer. It's more like a Ferrari.
Uh-huh.
A bee is kind of about an inch long. It's fuzzy. It's cute. It's like the Volkswagen Bug.
Yes.
And bees can only sting one time because...
And you said they knew that.
Yeah.
Talk about that for just a second in case people missed it. That just ripped my heart out.
Yeah, bees do not want to sting you because they know that if they do, they're going to die because their stinger stays in your body and it also pulls out their internal organs and so they fall to the ground. A wasp, that doesn't happen. They can sting over and over and over. And so they're much more aggressive animal and they'll actually rob honeybee hives and sting and kill honeybees to get their honey. So they
just eat everything. They'll eat honey and your barbecue beef.
And they do, they do have a purpose. Wasps also pollinate. Any flying bug practically does. But they do live in nests. The queen builds the whole nest. But they don't store honey. Those are papery things.
And they're also gorgeous, by the way.
Oh, yeah. They're really. Yeah. But no, they're very aggressive, and they will chase you down. And a bee will warn you. A honeybee will warn you first. It will headbutt you to get you to back away from the hive. It the last thing it wants to do is
sting. If we do something to kill a wasp, it is kind of in self defense.
You have my permission.
I didn't want to say it. And having said that, I'm sure there are people who love wasps and see their value.
I'll get letters from the wasp people.
But in terms of self-protection, you can worry about a wasp, and you don't have to worry about a bee because they've got better things to do.
Exactly. But I do, I would put an asterisk there. Mm-hmm. Some people are allergic to bee stings.
Yes.
But I want to clear that
even
up,
the
too.
Even the honeybee stings.
Yeah,
yes.
The honeybee. And if you're allergic, that means you'll go into anaphylactic shock. Mm-hmm. Your throat will close up and you need an injection from an EpiPen immediately. Mm-hmm. So we keep those with us. But a lot of people will say, I'm allergic, just because their hand will swell up the size of a cantaloupe.
Uh-huh.
That's not allergic. That can be a very typical reaction to a bee venom.
Oh, so don't assume you're allergic just because of that.
No. If you swell up really, really big, it's normal. And the more times you're stung, the more your body will be used to it. And then the reaction will be less and less and less.
Oh, so like an immunization almost.
Yeah. And some people get stung on purpose because there's a belief that it prevents arthritis.
Does it?
Grandpa swears by it.
Uh-huh.
And so people, it's called bee venom therapy. They'll go to a doctor who will sting them with live bees on purpose.
Oh, I was going to ask. Okay, live bees.
They'll take a live bee and hold it. And it's terrible. They kill the bee, but they'll put it right where your arthritis is, like your elbow or your wrist, and sting you.
Never heard of that. That's really interesting. And there's no way of, like, milking the bee of the venom without killing it so that you could inject it? And
I don't believe so, although I haven't researched it thoroughly. Okay. The way I hear is they actually just grab a bee and... But... a lot of the beekeepers I know in town don't even use gloves when they open the hive and inspect it.
Why?
Because with gloves, it's hard to feel where your fingers are and you can squish them by accident.
Oh, okay.
So they don't get stung. I'm still a little too scared. I've tried it a few times and I'm getting there. I want to be... I want to be cool like they are and not wear gloves. But
there's also something nice about a direct flesh to flesh relationship.
Yeah, you can
with
feel
any
them.
Creature.
You can you can feel them vibrating on your hand. You can actually and they've showed me you can scoop them up, handfuls of them, and they don't sting you.
Well, this brings me really to my next question because you mentioned that bees can sense fear.
Yes, they can.
And I'd like you to talk about that because it seems to me that an animal sensing fear is a really intelligent protection because the fearful person is really the one most likely to kill you.
I would imagine so. Or the one that's giving off more adrenaline. Like if a bear is going to rob your hive, it's probably in a heightened state and giving off some kind of smell that's similar to fear.
Okay, so that's another thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think of it this way. Some dogs can smell cancers or diseases.
Oh, yes.
And horses can smell upcoming weather changes. So bees can also see the unseen and they can smell fear.
Yes.
And that's why if you're new to coming to a hive, the beekeeper will probably tell you, or ask you, what's your fear level, 1 to 10? And based on that, talk to you about how close to stand or where to stand or, you know, whether or not they're going to let you actually touch the bees. Because I think they, in my experience, it's always the person who's the most fearful who gets stung. We've only
sense to me, really.
We've only had two people, including my, well, three, including myself, get stung up on the roof. And they were both, they were very afraid. And in one case, they weren't wearing the protection. And in my case, I wasn't wearing protection either. And I wasn't smoking the bees to calm them. And I was taking their hive apart. I was in a hurry.
That. You weren't what the bees to calm them?
Smoking.
What does that mean?
You, when you take the hive apart, and especially when you take their honey out, which is what I was doing in a rush, you fill a smoker. It's a can with bellows on a side and spout, and you just smoke over the frames. So it calms the bees down. But the reason it does is because it tricks them into thinking their hive is on fire. So they gorge themselves with honey so they can fly off and start a new hive somewhere else.
Oh.
So they get lethargic, like Thanksgiving afternoon, and they're just kind of, you know, full. So they're not as aggressive or, you know.
If you are not afraid, if you really have no fear of bees and you put your hand into the hive, I would guess that you're doing something gentle and really not carrying the scent of a threat at all.
Right. They'll just walk over it to get to what they need to do. They are kind of OCD about their jobs.
Yes.
So they really don't stop for anything. And
that's what I was told as a child. I remember that.
So
I don't know where that, but you know, then you hear about stinging, but I think I'm confusing that. You know, there was a movie called, I don't remember what it was called. Oh, My Girl.
Mm.
Do you remember that? I think that's what it was called with Anna
Paquin.
No. It was with that adorable little boy. Anyway, he gets killed because he's aggravating a hornet's nest.
Oh.
And they all come out and chase him and sting him.
Okay, and you see, and that's not a honeybee.
Right.
A honeybee wouldn't do that.
But I wonder how many people just would not, before listening to you, know the difference. So I'm really grateful for that.
Although there is an asterisk there, too. Africanized honeybees are the only honeybees that will do that.
Those are the ones we messed around with.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about that dim-witted plan.
Well, all I know about that is that they were just moving up north from
Mexico. How we got them. Didn't somebody decide to take the very productive honeybees
and breed them,
with
more
aggressive and larger what kind of bees? And instead of getting a big bee that produced lots of honey, they got a bee that did lots of stinging.
Yeah.
It was like putting the pike in the lake.
I mean, bees, it's so stupid of us because bees know what they've been doing. There are petroglyphs and hieroglyphs of bees in caves and in Egyptian tombs. There are pictures of bees and beekeepers. And they...
Well, that was such a lesson, and we should keep our myths off.
They've been making honey since forever, and we don't need to tell them how to do it.
Now, do the honeybees, I understand from you, sting to save the hive, essentially. I mean, it's a sacrificial act.
Right.
Because they know they're going to die. What motivates the yellow jackets to sting and sting and sting? Just nasty?
I think that maybe if they feel threatened in some way or they're, that's a really good question. I don't know why, unless someone's messed with their nest, it's winter and they're very hungry and you're blocking their food. In between them and some food.
Yes. And a honeybee wouldn't sting for that reason.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I don't want to say absolute.
Yes. I realize that I'm asking questions that maybe you wouldn't necessarily know that.
I do know that honeybees do get hungrier in the winter. And, you can listen to their buzz when you open up the hive. And it's different in winter than it is in spring when everything's dandy and full of honey flows.
And they communicate with each other?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You can see them. Well, they communicate in a lot of ways. They dance.
Oh, talk about that.
There's a thing called a waggle dance. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of different jobs in a hive. There are guard bees who guard the entrance. There are scout bees that go out and find the source. There are attendant bees whose only job is to walk around the queen and make sure she's fed, warm, nurse bees, all kinds of bees. The scout bees, once they find a good flower source, they will come back to the hive and they'll dance. Mm-hmm. They'll lift their butt in the air and wiggle to indicate the direction of the source. And there's usually about four or five dancing, kind of arguing over where the flowers, the best flowers are. And it's something like, you know, last bee standing, you know, so you think you can dance kind of thing.
How funny.
It's like the one who's just the most ardent about their dance
gets
their way. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is all so interesting. This is like communal living at its, we could learn several lessons.
Oh, I know. It's fascinating. The more you get into it, it's unbelievable.
I had a thought the other day after we first talked and I first listened to you and then listening to this. And in terms of love letters, I have something that I may even do because of my own having overcome fear of honeybees.
Going to write to the bees?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I absolutely.
I'll deliver it. We'll put sugar on it and they'll eat it. They will actually eat it. They eat paper.
I may send it to you to deliver it. Okay.
And we'll put powdered sugar on it and we'll put it in there and they'll chew it up.
Perfect. But then I was thinking, just as, you know, we can send the same letter out. And by the way, you know, you don't have to just send a love letter because of your own experience. Well, this is my experience listening to Meredith, of course, in some way. But I may just send a copy to my granddaughter about not being afraid of bees and what I've learned.
Where does your granddaughter live?
In San Francisco.
Oh, then you two can come see the hive, too. That'll really
can we
get
both
her over
do it?
It. Yeah.
Well, I don't think she's afraid of them.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I don't have any indication. She's aware because if she sees one, she says, oh, a bee. Mm-hmm. And usually it's not, you know, that's
I'm like this, oh, a bee, and I follow it. Uh-huh. I just want to see what it's doing. I'm the other way.
Naturally.
I run to it.
Yes. Well, that makes sense for you, of course. So send it to her.
That's good.
And just get it out there for, you know, it's one of the things love letters can do. Just send it to little people. And then I'm thinking even a love letter to the wasps.
Yeah, I probably should do that too.
What would you say?
Well, I might apologize for giving them a bad rap and calling them the mean carnivore Ferraris of the insect world. But I would say if you go anywhere near my honeybee hives, I'm still stomping on you.
Okay. But that, you know, that's like, that's got a really nice quality of a true love letter is understanding what another creature is going through. I think that's wonderful. And I think it would be great if you do write that to send it to yourself and keep it with the envelope and just stick it in some book or stick it someplace that someone will find it. I mean, you're in a position to accumulate not only all the knowledge you have and the beautiful writing that you do, but to leave notes.
Well,
you know, it's like Michelangelo's workbooks.
Yeah. Well,
someone will find them someday.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole idea with the memoir that I'm writing, is that all the stuff I'm living right now is the culmination of my childhood. Mm-hmm. And it's beekeeping is a really interesting topic right now. And so all of that would be collected in not notes, but like one book, as you were saying at the beginning, like a moment in time. And, you know, maybe I'll come back and on the show when it's done and we can talk about
that.
That would be great.
But I was thinking, in addition to your book, to have something in your handwriting, your thoughts in your handwriting mailed to
the wasp at Waspville,
Wasconsin, care of Meredith May. And then you have an actual envelope and something in your handwriting and something that your hand has actually touched, just like it has actually touched the bees.
Yeah.
There's so many wonderful fantasy things that you could do. You could write that letter and send it to your grandfather.
Yeah, I know. And,
endless.
You know, I'm also thinking I can talk about that another time, because I could talk forever and I'm about this.
I could listen forever.
I've learned how to make soap and I've learned how to...
Oh, from the wax?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And I've learned how to make moisturizer and creams and all kinds of like beauty products from honey. I do.
I mean, I wish it were a television moment, this flawless skin, but you probably come to that genetically too.
Oh, well,
that wasn't just.
Yeah, it's fun. I met this perfumer in El Cerrito, Lori Davis, and Lori Stern. She grows beautiful flowers, you know, perfume flowers in her yard, and she soaks them in oil,
mm-hmm.
mixes them with melted down wax from her beehive, and it makes this amazing.
I'm not going to be able to think of this, just like I couldn't think of the movie, sorry to say, but there was a product when I was a child many years ago, and it was from beehives that mm-hmm. one of the major cosmetic companies was putting out, mm-hmm. and it was a big deal for a very long time.
Yeah, I swear by it. I mean, it's.
I've also heard that eating honey, if you have allergies, if you eat honey that is made, let's say you're allergic to sage or.
Mm-hmm.
And you eat the honey, you can build up an immunity to some of the things. Have you heard that?
Oh, yeah. It's never been scientifically proven, but it makes sense, and people swear by it, that, you know, when you have allergies, it's usually one of the main things is the pollen. So mm-hmm. if you ingest pollen, but you have to get the honey that's
right.
made closest to your neighborhood.
Right. That's what I heard,
so you
yes.
You'll need...
Local.
You know, if you live near the Chronicle and you have allergies, you should probably get your hands on some Chronicle honey. We made, I think, 72 pounds.
Wow.
No, more than that. Not about 9,500 pounds of honey this year. And we gave most of it away to everybody at the Chronicle. But this next season, we're going to have to figure out how to make it publicly available. We're still working on it.
Wonderful. It's a wonderful life you lead there at the Chronicle.
And it's fun.
Beekeeping, so interesting. Thank you for coming back.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. You wanted to correct one other thing about what they see.
Oh, right. I lied in the first time we talked. I was talking about how bees see differently, and I used the wrong word. I said they see infrared, but they don't. They see ultraviolet light. So I think we were talking about why you don't swat at a honeybee, because mm-hmm. it's going to make a really weird, colorful, trippy blur in front of their eyes, and it scares them.
Is that still true?
That's still true, yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
They see differently than us.
Okay. So there is a lot to learn in this world of bees and wasps and hornets and the differences. And there are so many love letters to write surrounding this whole thing. And maybe people listening will write love letters about bees to their grandchildren and children. And let's start to dissuade the fear, because sometimes fear makes us kill something needlessly
mm-hmm.
or swat at them and terrify them. And it just broke my heart when I learned from Meredith how the bees feel at being swatted and treated badly.
Yeah.
You don't want to cause terror in any little creature.
And so, they're responsible for 40% of the food in the grocery store that you're eating.
That's right.
So don't kill almonds
and avocados.
Everything.
List goes on. We will have no more of any of those foods that are critical to our physical health and balance.
Yeah. Ladybugs and other flying insects
mm-hmm.
pollinate a little bit, but the bees do all of it.
Right. So if we think that we're not dependent on every one of these little creatures, we are making a mistake.
Yep.
Okay, thank you, dear. I'm so happy with this. I learned so much. And this is Janet Gallen saying see you next time, or talk to you next time. And please remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion, and you can write them to any creature on Earth. Bye.